we are not unused to cold in the Northeast, but it has been colder than normal.
Yeah.
You know, we are typically this time of year somewhere, you know, in the 30s or 40s, but it has consistently been under 20 degrees because of this polar vortex thing, which I'm sure is going to be a sci-fi original movie within like a week.
Just polar bears and a tornado. Roar!
Pretty much. It sounds like a polar vortex.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hello, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. My name is Casey, and musing on the idea of setting someone on fire doesn't mean you really want to set them on fire. It's just the thought of it that makes you happy, but only for a second, then you feel bad, but that second could be a lot of fun. I'm an anomaly.
My name is Sue, and I'm from the government safety place.
Is that a question?
Government safety place, and I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast. We're so happy to be back with the main topic.
You can't see it, but I have jazz hands.
Why can't podcasts be a visual medium?
Well, they can be, but that'd be a lot more work.
It would be. I don't want to do that. Our main topic today is the canceled series Pushing Daisies that aired on ABC.
So sad. So sad it's canceled.
Yeah. But that happens to Brian Fuller a lot.
Yeah.
I would venture that it happens more to Brian Fuller than it does to Joss Whedon.
Strong words, my friend. But before we go there, what you been doing?
Well, recovering from the holidays.
Still.
For one thing. Yes. Well, it's... Well, let's see.
Recorded before.
Yeah. Because the last time we recorded an Anomaly Supplemental, it was the middle of December.
Yeah, it is currently the middle of January. Or really the end of January.
It's the end of January. Like, we are cutting it down to the wire when it comes to monthly recordings.
We can do it.
We can do it. We can make our dreams come true.
See, I thought we could make a lovely dress for Cinderella.
Why can't you just think like me? Ever since our last supplemental recording, we have recorded our Moment of Who about Matt Smith's last episode. And I've been reading Still a Natural History of Dragons. I've been reading A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. And I finished that. Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls by David Sedaris, who is so funny. I love his books. And I am currently reading Jim Henson, the Biography by Brian J. Jones. I cried after reading the prologue.
Yeah. Yeah. I have received that book for Christmas, and I have not cracked it open yet because I don't like to cry on public transit, and that's where I read. So... It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I have the print book, but the audiobook also became available at my library, so I decided to combine the two. Mm. And I listened to the prologue while walking my dog. And that was embarrassing. Because I'm not going to give anything away, but it was so good. I also got the chance to see movies this past month because one of the Christmas gifts I received was a gift card to the Alamo Drafthouse, which is the fancy theater we have down here in Texas.
Nice.
Where, yeah. And I went to see Frozen again with my family because you don't turn that opportunity down, and I still love it just as much.
Yeah.
Karen and I also saw The Desolation of Smaug, the second Hobbit movie, and we also saw Her, which is an Academy Award nominee, and it's a sci-fi movie. I was not expecting it to be, like, it's not traditional sci-fi with boom, boom, explosions and spaceships, but it takes the idea of one piece of technology being different and gaining consciousness, and it's so good. It's amazing. And we also got a Wii!
Yay!
Yay! We played Super Mario Brothers for the Wii. Because I like playing co-op and I like more arcadey games.
Like original Wii or the new one?
Oh, original Wii. Okay. I've heard the Wii U is not that great. But, yeah, I died a lot.
This is why I mostly play Mario Kart.
Yeah. I die a lot in Mario Kart, too. But, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also got Kevin to start watching At Midnight on Comedy Central. Because that is funny. If you're a part of social media, but you also like to make fun of it, I highly recommend that show.
So it's like the soup for Twitter?
No, it's more like QI and Whose Line Is It Anyway? Because it's hosted by Chris Hardwick, of course, because...
No wonder you love it.
Well, it's not just because of that. He also gets really funny comedians to be on there. Patton Oswalt was on an episode, Brian Posehn... Kristen Schaal, who's in Bob's Burgers.
Bob's Burgers is one of the greatest animated shows currently airing.
Kevin loves that show.
Bob's Burgers is amazing. Tina is the best. But also the best are Louise and Jean. And Linda. And Bob. And Teddy.
So all of them?
All of them are the best.
I saw the episode with the fan fiction.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny and accurate. So what have you been doing?
Well, I just barely made my Goodreads goal. For 2013.
You did it!
I finished Beauty Queens by Libba Bray, which was about sort of like, you know, Miss America, but not the trademarked version, meets Lord of the Flies. It was amusing. I read some more Unwritten, the graphic novel series. I finished up the Folklore of Discworld that I basically was picking at for months, reading bits at a time. Because it wasn't, you know, a continuous storyline, so you could do that.
Right.
And then, since the first, I have read Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell.
Which, how is that?
It's really good.
I want to read that so bad.
I had a hard time putting it down. It's, you know, the twin girls go off to college, and one of them is very introverted and, like, socially awkward. And, like, it's that type of character done accurately. Like, I was reading through some of these descriptions, and I was like, this is exactly correct. But no, I enjoyed it quite a bit. And then I also read Parasite by Mira Grant, mm-hmm. which was great. Although, in my opinion, not quite as great as her Newsflesh series, because I sort of saw the big reveal at the end coming from, like, page 20. But still, very enjoyable read. I like her stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. She is also Shauna Maguire. They're the same person. So I haven't read anything yet written as Shauna. Mm-hmm. She writes her urban fantasy stuff under her real name, Shauna Maguire, and her sort of like horror sci-fi stuff under Mira Grant. So I started with the zombies books. But anyway... I'm currently reading a nonfiction book called They Fought Like Demons, Women Soldiers in the Civil War. And I'm not too far into it yet, but it's really interesting. There are more accounts of women joining the ranks of the military during this time than I ever would have thought. And it's kind of amazing. And also kind of amazing how they weren't really questioned until, you know, they were suddenly giving birth. So, yeah, just a part of history that, you know, they don't tell you about in school.
Yeah. That's actually a subject I've always been interested in, female soldiers, because I remember in high school thinking, were there any women dressing up as men to go into war? And yes, there were. Yep. All throughout history.
Yep. For the most part, whenever there have been accounts from the men in their regiments or whatever, it has always been that, you know, the men were saying they were surprised to find out that, you know, so-and-so was female because they were such an outstanding fighter. And it's never like, oh yeah, I guessed because she was weak. But no, it was always like, I'm really surprised that that's a chick because she was strong and courageous and valiant. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I might have to pick up that book.
Yeah.
When I'm done with the other ones I have to read.
With the giant pile of books, yes.
Yeah.
So many books.
There are too many books.
Non-books. I have decided that this year one of my goals / resolutions for 2014 is to actually watch all of TOS. So I'm doing that. I'm about 7 episodes in. I made a decent headway, which is like almost 10% for TOS. I made decent headway when a lot of TV was not currently airing, like right around the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And since, though, not so much, because I went to California. And
what did you do?
I ran a lot.
You do that anyway.
I did the Tinkerbell race weekend in Disneyland, and I did the 10K on Saturday and the half marathon on Sunday, and somehow I managed it and completed them both. And on that trip, I also got to hang out with our fellow podcaster and friend of this podcast, Randy, who was also running on Sunday with his brother-in-law.
Oh, fun!
And then because of a snowstorm back here, here being the Northeast, my flight got canceled. So I got to have an even longer vacation in Disneyland. But yeah,
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah. it made for a couple interesting travel days. But I got back here, I don't know, like Wednesday? As in a couple days ago. So I'm still sort of recovering and readjusting, you know, from 85 degree weather to 18 degree weather.
Oh, gosh. We actually had a little tiny snowpocalypse down here in Texas. Like, it was...
That sentence just blows my mind.
Snowpocalypse?
No, just the Texas part.
No, it snowed. Like, it didn't snow in the city that I'm in, but my sister-in-law sent pictures of my niece and my nephew playing in snow. And they're only about an hour away. Well, not enough to build a gigantic snowman, but enough to build a snowman.
Oh, my.
Transition.
Transition.
How great is that?
I'm so happy.
Thank you, Rick Moyer.
Thank you so much, Rick Moyer. The minute I heard it, I was just laughing. Rolling on the floor laughing.
So, Pushing Daisies.
Pushing Daisies is great. End of topic. End of discussion.
No.
Wipe your hands, walk away. So, I think we've been planning a Pushing Daisies episode for a while now. We just didn't know where to put it.
Yeah, it kept getting moved around because things happened.
2013 happened.
Yeah. So, Pushing Daisies is a show that is kind of difficult to put in a genre box. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy, but it's also kind of a drama. It's certainly not, you know, a sitcom comedy. It is a crime show, and it's a sci-fi show, and it's at times a horror show, and it's got this sort of, like, so oversaturated, hyper-real visual design to it. It's just different. It's so... Mm-hmm. I don't even know. What would you call it?
I don't know. I would err on the side of it being a comedy when it comes to choosing between drama and comedy, because while it has drama moments in it, for the most part, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a funny show, and it's very quirky. And basically, I just describe it as a modern-day fairy tale. That's the best way to describe it. Not in the way that Once Upon a Time uses fairy tale characters.
Right.
But there's something in the way of magic realism, which is just a little tiny bit of fantasy that makes the world more interesting. Yeah. That's how I describe it when it's brought up. And even then, people go, what?
It's like a child's storybook. Like, mm-hmm. if you think, not that this would happen, but, oh, or even like the Tom and Jerry cartoons. Like, you know, if a cartoon character gets run over by a truck and he's got the tire tracks in his face and is, yeah. like, walking around with that, that happens in Pushing Daisies. And nobody questions it, and it's totally reasonable.
It's very true.
It's like a live-action cartoon for adults.
The dog is growling like, I don't know if I agree with your assessment.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I can see your point that it's cartoonish. At least in terms of the murders and stuff, because...
Right.
Really, there shouldn't be tire tracks in somebody's face. Technically, the head would be smooshed.
Right. It's like a whimsical CSI. Maybe not.
It's the best TV show, like, within the last couple of years, for sure.
Oh, yeah. So why did it last 21 episodes? I think that this show was definitely a victim of the writer strike. Because season one, they ordered a full 22 episodes, but only 9 scripts were finished by the time the strike came along. So there were only 9 episodes. Brian Fuller tweaked the last one to make it like a series finale. Instead of picking up where they left off when the strike was over, they went right into season two. And in season two, like with a lot of shows that were hurt by the strike, ratings fell quickly, and only 10 episodes aired. The show was canceled. They eventually, in the spring, aired the final 3 episodes. And it's just kind of sad to see that happen to this mm-hmm. show, because it got really fantastic critical reception, too. Yeah. Like, there was almost completely all-around praise for the show.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't know if I could entirely say it was the writer's strike, because Breaking Bad went through the exact same thing, and they only had 9 episodes as well. And, you know, that went on for another 4 or 5 seasons. I would say that, you know, there are networks who don't believe in a show enough that they will, you know, basically kill their show, whether it's by changing, you know, time slots and stuff, which they did a lot with season 2 and shortening episode orders and all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, I think the reason why it got two seasons in the first place was because of the writer's strike. A part of me thinks that ABC would have canceled it if they had had a full season order.
I don't know. The ratings were really strong for the first season and were like half of that for the second season. I'm not sure. I'm also not sure you can compare it to Breaking Bad, which was on a cable network, because it takes a lot more to sustain a broadcast, like a show on ABC, than it does a show on AMC.
True. And it was the first time they were experimenting with traditional script TV,
right.
AMC. Although, you know, I don't know. I mean, they ordered the season because of the first episode, which is an amazing, amazing episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, rumors of possible cancellation started happening after that, from what I remember. So when the second season was announced, I was excited. And then I wasn't. But we'll get into that. So.
Yeah, I didn't discover the show until after it was already canceled.
Yeah, I was watching it as it aired.
Yeah, so.
It was great. So good.
I wish I had been.
So, for those of you who don't know Pushing Daisies, for one thing, spoilers. Spoilers are going to happen starting now.
But hopefully not for everything, just for, like, premises.
Yeah, premises and, you know, we might reveal some, you know, tidbitty stuff from the first and second season. Basically, the story of Pushing Daisies is this. Or, as the narrator would say, the facts were these.
Previously on Pushing Daisies, young Ned had a special gift. He could touch dead things and bring them back to life. But he could only bring the dead back to life for 1 minute. Any longer, and someone else had to die. And there was one more thing he had to learn. First touch, life. Second touch, dead again, forever. But as young Ned grew into the Pie Maker, this gift proved to be most useful in the untimely death of his childhood sweetheart, Charlotte Charles.
Are you in love with her?
You only got a minute.
I know.
60 seconds.
I know.
What if you didn't have to be dead?
You can't touch me.
So a kiss is out of the question? You touch murder victims, you ask who killed them, you touch them again, they go back to being dead, and then you collect the reward?
That's it in a nutshell.
When I make an observation...
Compliment or criticism?
A neutral thought, I would say, is neither complimentary nor critical.
Neutral thought gives me pause.
You seem decidedly unhappy.
What are you baiting at?
An offer to repair your espresso machine.
So something you just glanced over was that the series has a narrator.
just
another part of its quirkiness.
Well, the narrator is Jim Dale, who is a renowned theater actor, but also he's a renowned audiobook reader. And one of the most famous narration things he's ever done is the Harry Potter audiobooks.
He's not the only renowned theater actor who makes an appearance in this show. Just in the first couple episodes, you've got Kristen Chenoweth, who's a series regular. You've got Ellen Green, who is also a series regular.
And who we talked about before in Little Shop of Horrors.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have those two in this kind of show, they make use of them. So it's not every episode, but you will hear some music. And Raul Esparza even shows up in the first couple episodes. And then throughout the series, you'll see people you recognize from Buffy. Joel McHale is on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, there's some really wonderful guest stars.
The one that made me happy was Ricky Lindholm, who is a part of the musical group Garfunkel and Oates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the two girls who sing, "Pregnant women are smug." If you don't know that song, Google that song, because it's amazing.
They do some amazing things, plural.
Mm-hmm. And playing Ned is Lee Pace, who was recently in The Desolation of Smaug as Thranduil, the elf king of Mirkwood. I like him. He's pretty. He's pretty. I think he's pretty. I don't care about your opinion.
I didn't say he wasn't pretty.
You said it in a funny looking way.
I said he's funny looking. That doesn't mean I don't like that he's funny looking.
And G. McBride, who...
Yes.
Yes, he plays the PI, Emerson Codd, and he is hilarious.
They're all hilarious. What's... Oh, I'm not going to say it right. Swoozy?
Swoozy Kurtz.
Yeah. Swoozy Kurtz, who is Aunt Lily, is... might be my favorite. I think it's between her and Emerson.
Well, the thing is that it's hard not to love Emerson Codd because he's one of those people who just does not give a crap. He doesn't give a crap about you or your feelings.
Yeah. But the ants, I love the ants so much, and their personalities just are so perfect. You know everything you need to know about them in the Halloween episode. where someone rings their doorbell, and Vivian, who is Ellen Green, says, "Is that clock right? It's 2:00 in the morning." And Lily says, "I'll get the shotgun." And Vivian says, "I'll get the bowl of candy."
I did really like that part.
I mean, it's just that's them to a T.
What I love so much about the show is that it doesn't hide from the quirkiness that comes with social phobias and introversion and all that stuff, and being like overly optimistic. Like, I love the character of Charlotte Charles, also known as Chuck. She's called Chuck in the series. And she's just so happy, and she believes in love. And, like, her aunts love cheese, so she grew up believing that the refrigerator was called the cheese box. And when she comes across, like, suspects and stuff, she's like, "I don't think that person did it. They seem much too nice."
Oh, it's all so great.
But the most interesting thing about the show, for sure, is it's a love story between Ned and Chuck. Because they start as childhood sweethearts, and they have their first kiss when they're 10. But he finds out that she dies. He brings her back to life to find out who murdered her. And he decides that he wants to have her around because she was so important to him as a kid. And he's not allowed to touch her again, but they fall in love. So the show has to continually find ways for them to be, you know, physical without each other, without having to have contact with one another.
And it's very cute the way it's done.
It really is. And then you have characters like Olive Snook, who like touching just way too much. Especially Ned.
Well, she is also in love with Ned.
Well, of course.
And he is clueless.
What I love about the character of Ned and the way Lee Pace works with him is that he's always very closed off. His shoulders are hunched inward, and he's always hiding his hands in his pockets or, like, crossing his arms in front of his chest, and his head is slightly down. It's great character work. And what I love is Kristen Chenoweth is so tiny. She's 4'11" in real life compared to 6-foot Lee Pace. And she continually just tries to get in his face.
The world, too, is just so colorful. So often the backgrounds and the characters and just everything is in bright colors, but Ned is the only character who's consistently wearing grays and blacks and just sort of dark, unremarkable things. So he clearly wants to be sort of overlooked. He doesn't want anyone to notice him. He just wants to make his pies and be left alone.
What I find really interesting about at least the first season, there is television that keeps getting renewed season after season after season. Mm-hmm. And those are procedurals. Most often forensic procedurals. And what I love about Pushing Daisies is that it has a lot of fun with that. Because, you know, obviously in CSI, you see the gross makeup of the murder victim, mm-hmm. where their head is smashed in, or they've run into their knives over and over again. What's fun is that since Ned has to touch these people quickly to find out how they died or any clues to how they died, he gets to interact with these corpses, and they have great makeup. Like we discussed that, you know, one is run over by a car, the other one has his face chewed off by a dog, and he's just like, is there something wrong with my face? And Ned has to go, no. So the makeup is really good. The music, like the score, is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Also, the costumes are gorgeous.
Yeah, there's a lot of vintage feel in them, especially with Chuck's costuming.
I really love her costumes. I really do. I kept, you know, seeing a scene after scene with her going, I'd wear that. I'd wear that.
Yeah.
I'd wear that. And what's funny is that Olive Snook is usually in the same outfit over and over again, I guess because it's her work attire.
Yeah.
That doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It's her pie hole uniform.
Which is weird because she has a zipper down the front, and I think I remember when in one episode it was like way down and her cleavage was kind of busting out because Kristen Chenoweth is a busty lady and there's nothing wrong with that. But I remember it being like up a little bit more, so I'm just like, is she trying to attract Ned's attention particularly in this episode? Because I don't think it's working. And in that way, she's very much a cartoon character because, as we know, cartoon characters usually wear the same outfit over and over and over again.
I'm trying to think of things to say that don't get too spoilery. But eventually Olive does join their little Scooby gang. And when she basically pairs up with Emerson, I think it's perfection.
Their bromance is the best one ever. Like, even in the beginning episodes, she's like, what's the poop? The poop? You know, the poop. The skinny. The scoop. The dealio. My absolute favorite Olive and Emerson interactions are in the episode Girth, where you find out that she was a jockey.
Which is great.
I want to hire you. Technically, I already have, since you were so grabby with the cash.
Think of it as an escrow between my thighs. What's the case?
Yesterday, a farrier named Lucas Shoemaker was found dead. Trampled.
Why should I care about a dude that sells fur coats?
Not a furrier. A farrier. Air.
Farrier?
It's a blacksmith. Put shoes on horses.
Don't try to act like that's a word everybody knows.
Police are saying his death was a... accident.
You got reason to think otherwise?
I might.
This Farrier, a friend of yours?
We used to work together.
You ever put shoes on all of you?
Wasn't like that. We were competitors.
What'd you compete about?
Promise you won't laugh?
No.
I used to be a professional horse jockey.
I love this show.
It's so good. I was smiling for a good 9 hours yesterday watching this show. It also explores the fame of synchronized swimmers. Chuck's aunts, Lily and Vivian, who are called the Darling Mermaid Darlings. That's another thing that I really like going off the topic of that is the way they use names in this show.
Everything is doubled or alliterative or something.
Right.
Like the episode with the dogs where the wives use almond-flavored cream coffee creamer.
Mm-hmm.
Creamer. It's basically got cream in it like 6 times. But they're in court of core, and, you know, Chuck's full name is Charlotte Charles and her father's name is Charles Charles. or in the jockey episode, the main suspect of John Joseph Jacobs. I think that's the right order.
Right. The greatest thing about this show is that Ned's just Ned.
Mm-hmm.
You never find out his last name. He's just called the Pie Maker.
Mm-hmm.
You never even find out his parents' name, right? Names.
I don't right? think so.
But also, I love Digby.
Yes.
Digby is my favorite.
Digby is Ned's dog, who was hit by a truck when Ned was just young, what, like 8 or 9?
Mm-hmm.
And that is how Ned first discovers his gift, if you will. So he has that same sort of relationship with Digby as he does with Chuck, in that he can never pet or scratch or touch his dog, which is so sad.
It's the saddest. Like, Ned has to be sent off to a boarding school, and Digby misses him so much that he goes to find Ned, and Ned sees him, and they run towards each other, and then they remember, oh, we can't touch each other. And so Ned has to pick up a stick and scratch Digby's head.
Clearly we are animal people.
Quite clearly. So obviously the cast is amazing. The writing is so quick and so clever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've discussed it before. I love Brian Fuller's stuff. I love Hannibal. I can't wait for season 2. Has it aired yet?
No, February.
Yes! I also really liked the first season of Dead Like Me, which is also a great show.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one series I haven't seen that he had some involvement in was Wonderfalls. And I've heard that's a great show, too.
Mm-hmm.
All of his work is really quirky, and after watching all of his stuff, it seems like he's created his own little universe, just like there's a Whedonverse.
Right, where they're all sort of similar. Well, Pushing Daisies was originally intended to be a spinoff of Dead Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense that they have a similar feeling.
Mm-hmm. And in Hannibal, it sounds like a couple of characters from Dead Like Me were reinvented for Hannibal. And maybe even one from Pushing Daisies, I don't remember. But he also really likes using, Brian Fuller likes using the same cast again.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ellen Green has been in Hannibal. She was in Heroes when he was working on that.
Does that sound like anybody else you know?
Joss Whedon. They're both my favorite. But I respect both Brian Fuller and Joss Whedon because they like playing around with the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both so different from each other that I can distinguish what's a Brian Fuller show and what's a Joss Whedon show. Like, it's clearly, you know, their own products.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Brian Fuller is just as quick as Joss Whedon. I refer you to my anomalous statement. Which is possibly, like, one of the most popular GIFs I see on Tumblr. Just one of them.
There's some really fantastic stuff in the dialogue of these episodes. I just...
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able to rewatch all of it in the past weekend, but I have watched quite a bit, and it's just... You miss it the first time, I think.
It makes me so sad that the series was canceled.
And it so just sad. Ends.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of, sort of wraps up with this weird little epilogue, but for mm-hmm. the most part, it just ends.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of a little underwhelmed by season 2, but it's been a while since I've watched it, mm-hmm. too, so I may need to watch it again. But, you know, I watched the first couple of episodes. I think what kind of started bothering me was that, this is going to sound bad, but But I think they were having Kristen Chenoweth sing too much to where it wasn't, you know, I love Olive Snook. I love that character, but it seemed like it was becoming more the Olive Snook show than it was an ensemble piece.
Right.
That's not to say that Kristen Chenoweth doesn't deserve her own show, because she does. But at the same time, you know, the important characters are Chuck and Ned. To me, it just felt like that kind of fell by the wayside when Olive Snook clearly became a character that Fuller wanted to keep giving material to. Plus, they ruined my ship. When I was young.
And which was?
Olive and Alfredo Aldarizio. And Alfredo Aldarizio was played... by Raul Esparza, and I loved their chemistry so much.
In like two episodes.
It was so good. And he had the best declaration of love scene ever.
That is a fantastic scene.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
If you loved me.
Yes.
And we could never, ever, ever touch. Wouldn't you eventually get over it and move on, letting someone else have the slightest hope that you might move on to them?
If I loved you.
Yeah.
Then I would love you in any way I could. And if we could not touch, then I would draw strength from your beauty. And if I went blind, then I would fill my soul with the sound of your voice and the contents of your thoughts until the last spark of my love for you lit the shabby darkness of my dying mind.
Nah, forget it.
And what it's destroyed by David Arquette, who I guess in general I'm not a fan of. I wasn't a fan of his character, Randy Man. I know that he just seemed like a character who should have just been in there once rather than taking the place of Alfredo Aldarizio.
Well, that's what happens when you get cast in a show. Like a Broadway show.
Brian Fuller could have let Olive Snook find out that she's perfectly happy by herself.
Well, that's true too.
Which is why I really want there to be a continuation of Pushing Daisies.
Well, it's not as if it hasn't been attempted.
I know. Like the past 3 years. Three, 4 years now. Yeah, just following news of that is just sad and tiring, and I'm so sad because Brian Fuller planned to make it a comic series, and then they decided, oh, let's just shorten it to a little graphic novel to kind of wrap things up, and then they lost their publisher.
Yep.
And you know, some pages have been released, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, the last news about it was, what, 2011 in the spring? Yeah, April 2011 was when it was officially confirmed that the books had been postponed. Not canceled, but postponed. So we'll see. But the success of the Veronica Mars Kickstarter this past year has sort of gotten Brian Fuller thinking about doing one for Pushing Daisies, although it would need significantly more because of the budgetary needs than Veronica Mars made. So he'd be looking at, you know, 12 to 15 million.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least they're, you know, it's still in his mind. He still wants to do more with this show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always good.
Yeah. I honestly think it would be a great movie. I think it would wrap things up, and it's so thrilling anyway, visually. You know, I think it could work. Even if it just goes to little art houses, I don't care. I want it so bad. And even a miniseries, because I know that Brian Fuller has also discussed Torchwood ending up on Stars to, you know, kind of continue their story, and he's just like, I would love to do that with Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, I'm not sure they were ever in talks. I think that was more just of a, yeah, I'd love to do that. That'd be great. The same way, you know, people have talked about there might be an eventual stage adaptation, But from what I have read about that, it was a reporter asking, hey, do you ever think there'll be a stage adaptation? And him going, sure, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
So it's not any kind of real news so much as it is hopeful speculation.
Yeah. I mean, I still hold out hope. Joss Whedon has been able to continue Firefly in not only Serenity, but also in the comic books. Mm-hmm. He's also found a way to continue the story of Angel and Buffy in those universes. And I just want Pushing Daisies back. I blame ABC for everything. But in the meantime, Hannibal is a great show, and I'm sure that's keeping Mr. Fuller very, very busy.
Yeah, well, just like you'd think Doctor Who would be enough to keep Moffat busy.
You would figure, right? So we received an email from Amber.
Yay, email.
Printing out the emails, printing out the emails. Not printing out emails, because that would be silly, because it's in my Gmail.
That was special.
Yeah, that's a word I get a lot. So Amber writes, hi ladies. In response to Pushing Daisies, that was a show that I didn't find out about until it was on DVD, and once I was able to watch it, really enjoyed. So much so, in fact, that when a friend of mine married a pie maker, my birthday pie has become a pear Gruyere pie, which is tricky because there really isn't a recipe for it, and most searching for it returns Pushing Daisies results. It's been a while since I've watched it, so actual thoughts on the show itself are a bit murky. I liked the aspect of him, Ned, teaming up with a detective to solve mysteries by asking people who died to clarify, identify things. I don't know if you watch Dead Like Me, but Chuck and her keeping tabs on her aunts reminded me a bit of Dead Like Me, where George checks up on her family after she's dead. The subject matter is rather morbid if you think about it, but they did such a good job with the colors and the over-the-top exaggeration of the world that I found it made it more comical and perhaps more palatable. I didn't necessarily want it to end after just two seasons, but at the same time, I wasn't ready to explore the world where the aunts knew that Chuck is alive after a fashion. So I was okay with the ending. Amber. Thank you so much, Amber. That's true. George did check up on her family a lot during Dead Like Me. Mm-hmm. And what I just realized is that Brian Fuller really likes playing with the names of his female characters, because George in Dead Like Me is his female protagonist, and Chuck is his female protagonist in Pushing Daisies.
Right.
More recently, in Hannibal, he gender-switched some of the characters from the Hannibal universe. So there's a reporter character named Freddie Lowndes in Hannibal, and he's a dude. And in one of the movies, I think it was Red Dragon, he was portrayed by Philip Seymour Hoffman. In the show, Freddie Lowndes is a gorgeous redheaded woman. I really appreciated that about Brian Fuller. I think that's one of the things that really draws me to his work, is that he's not afraid to play with gender or sexuality or anything.
Mm-hmm. On the comment about the aunts knowing that Chuck's alive, I think that scene was part of the epilogue that was tacked on to the end of the last episode. So if it hadn't been for the cancellation, that might not have happened. Because it seemed to come out of nowhere. Like, the last 5 or 6 minutes of the last episode just have nothing to do with what just happened. So I think they tried to do a wrap-up as best they could without actually having a whole episode to do it. And from what I understand, it was all pretty rushed when it happened. But yeah, if there is a mini-series or comic book series or TV movie or anything that's going to happen after what we've already seen, I'd be curious to see how he would deal with that.
I'd be curious too. He's also stated before that he wants to bring Alfredo Alderizio back, and he thinks it would be interesting, the choice Olive would have to make between Randy and Alfredo.
That's like your dream situation.
It is. And it would be her choosing Alfredo because screw Randy Mann. Anything else? Do you have anything else?
I don't think so. Did we talk long enough?
I'm sure we did.
Okay. And we stayed mostly on topic.
We also didn't reveal a lot of spoilers for Pushing Daisies. I'm proud of us.
It's because I want people to watch it. I don't want to tell you what happens. I want you to go watch it. Watch the show. It is 22 episodes. 13 and 9. It is 22 episodes.
Don't you have a math degree?
Shh. You can do it.
At least watch the first season and see how you feel. It's like when we recommended Slings and Arrows. There are only 6 episodes per season in Slings and Arrows, and I'm pretty sure some of you haven't watched it yet. You people are horrible.
But we love you. Please come back.
Yeah, that. But definitely the next episode is going to be super spoilery. We're going to have a reactionary episode to Sherlock Season 3. If you have seen Sherlock Season 3 already, you can send us an email. Make sure you mark it Sherlock Spoilers. And send us comments. Tell us what you like about Sherlock. Because it's a fun show.
Or if we've actually convinced you to watch Pushing Daisies, tell us what you thought. I think Sarah actually posted that she had just picked up Season 1.
I know, I'm so proud of her.
So, I'll be excited to hear what she thinks.
So, actually, that's my challenge. If you can at least watch the first episode, which is called Pilot, that is P-I-E hyphen L-E-T-T-E.
As in little pie.
Watch that 45 minutes, send us an email, and tell us what you think. And we're done.
Challenge issued.
Challenge issued. Accepted by some.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
And I think, yeah, we're done.
Yep.
I'm Sue.
And I'm Casey.
And this has been Anomaly Supplemental.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed. Right down to the last explosive.
Audio clips used in this podcast are used solely for the purposes of commentary. Pushing Daisies was created by Brian Fuller and is copyright of Living Dead Guy Productions and Warner Brothers Television. To purchase full seasons of Pushing Daisies, visit Amazon.com, iTunes, or your local retailer.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y-podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
World is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
Oh, different worlds.
Yeah. But on the bright side, I don't remember what I was going to say.
Oh, funny.